Hey, this is Lou Mangiello from WDW Radio, and you're listening to the Five-ish Fangirls Podcast. Let's do this.
Thank you, Max, for that marvelous introduction. I put a spell on you. And now you're mine. You can't stop the things I do. I ain't lying.
No! No! Don't listen to them!
Been 300 years, right down to the day. Now the witch is back, and there's hell to pay. I put a spell on you.
Good joke. Happy Halloween. Thanks a lot.
No, man, I'm serious.
Yeah, yeah. You got your head in your head.
You're not kidding.
You have a butt.
All right.
Yeah, gear up. Let's go, guys.
Tensions as we continue all the way to episode 297 of the Five-ish Fangirls Podcast. Oh, look, another glorious morning makes me sick. Welcome, everyone, to this week's episode of the Five-ish Fangirls Podcast. So glad you could join us. Let's start off like a tour of a virtual table and see who's joined us this week.
This is Brittany Bethlehem.
This is Chrissy in Salt Lake City.
This is Sally from Wisconsin.
And this is Rachel in hell. It's quite fabulous. Thank you. Hello, everyone.
Hello.
Hello.
I'm feeling extra fabulous.
Yes.
You can't see it, but I'm doing all sorts of wonderful hand gestures. Bette Midler would be proud, I hope. This is going to be a fun one.
Oh, yes.
I'm so excited for this one.
I love this movie.
It took us this long to watch.
I know. For the longest time, I thought we'd already done it, but we were all like, oh, no, we haven't. So we're going to review it, guys. So,
yeah. We did a We did a quick search of the archives and nope.
I knew we hadn't done it.
Well, okay, you knew we hadn't done it. Some of us have just the year, everything is just kind of blurred together. So
yes.
We're doing it now. So that's
it's kind of my job to keep track of what we have and haven't done. So
that is true.
True.
Pretty sure we've mentioned it though. So that could have been one. Yeah. We sort of talked.
I think it's probably been mentioned in a few of our Halloween episodes, but
now
here we are.
Yep. Absolutely.
And we are not apologizing in advance if we do quote some chapter and verse lines.
Yeah, no.
Well, how can you not?
Exactly.
Yeah. I thought Sing, because the song's been stuck in my head it's only stuck in my head in October.
Yeah. But it's been in my head all day. First we need to get to the news. So
which there's actually some fun news this time.
Yes. So speaking of Disney Plus, if you have a Disney Plus account, mark your calendar, and if you don't, you might want to get one. Because we are getting a new Star Wars holiday special.
Oh boy.
In Lego form.
Oh boy.
Yep.
Please tell me they're not using any of the script ideas from the first holiday special.
We'll discuss that. So.
Yeah, I will say this. I saw the ad on Facebook. All I saw was Star Wars Holiday Special Disney Plus. I was like, excuse me, what? And then I read further. I'm like, oh, this one's different.
Yeah. I actually thought it was
but
them
courtesy,
doing it.
Yeah. But courtesy of The Mandalorian, Life Day is canon.
Yes, it is.
So
from the first episode.
Yeah. So
and you know what? It's a holiday in a galaxy far, far away. I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So according to the announcement from Star Wars, the Lego Star Wars Holiday Special is going to pick up post episode 9. With Rey continuing her Jedi training, she comes upon something mystical in a Jedi temple that sends her hurtling through time, meeting Star Wars legends and visiting places of the past. But still, she must get back home for Life Day. So it's like Star Wars meets It's a Wonderful Life with Lego.
And a touch of Back to the Future. A
little bit. Yeah. So it's not going to be... It's going to be a combination of live action Star Wars actors and some of the voice actors from the cartoons. So we're going to get Kelly Marie Tran as Rose Tico. Billy Dee Williams is going to come back as Lando. Anthony Daniels is C-3PO. But then we're also going to have Matt Lanter, who does the voice of Anakin in the Clone Wars cartoon. Tom Kane, who does Yoda, along with Qui-Gon Jinn. James Arnold Taylor, who does Obi-Wan. And Dee Bradley Baker, who does the Clone Troopers. So, yeah.
Which as I just as a little side tangent, if you've played Jedi Fallen Order, there are a few cut scenes with the Clone Troopers in flashback, and Dee Bradley Baker does voice them as well. So all of these things are connecting to each other.
Yeah.
Which is great. So.
So, but that is going to drop on Disney Plus on November 17th. So, like I said,
so look for that, and maybe we'll do a mini review of it or something. We'll see.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, but that should be fun. I was like, yay! Yeah, because I kind of saw the same thing. I'm like, wait, what? What's going on here? And
yeah.
Like, Lego! Yeah. And I'm like, okay. Okay. That makes way more sense.
Uh-huh. You know what? You can do anything in Lego, and it's better. So we'll see.
Yeah. Well, the Lego stuff is like taken off. Yeah, it's almost its own wild animal.
Yes.
Yeah. So, but yeah, this should be a lot of fun. get you in the mood for the holidays. What day? And then a Big Finish, once again, just shut up, take my money. They have announced that they're going to be releasing a new box set with the War Doctor. And before you go, well, wait a minute, John Hurt's passed. Hold on a second. It is going to be the War Doctor's, like, kind of origin. Like, so I guess, like, what we saw after he regenerates into the War Doctor, that gap in between that and what we got with the John Hurt Big Finish.
Yep. So, yeah, because you see the reflection in Night of the Doctor, and it's young John Hurt.
Yes. Yeah.
So it's you know, so we are to assume that the War Doctor got old. sort of like, you know, the first Doctor, the William Hartnell Doctor, he's an old man. He's lived an old a long life, and so we're gonna see him or hear him, I guess, as a younger man, and he's going to be voiced by a gentleman named Jonathan Carley, who he says he's worked with. He's been in the original War Doctor releases, so he's gonna play John Hurt's Doctor as a younger man, and I'm like, oh, I like this idea, because they've already done voice actors, you know, voice impersonators for the third Doctor. Tim Treloar does an excellent John Pertwee, and so it's kind of like, you know, I think this works. I mean, it's Big Finish; they're going to be respectful and going to do this well, and I'm very interested in what they're going to do. I'm just kind of trying to figure out how I'm going to buy yet another box set.
Yeah, exactly.
From Big Finish, because and I want to pre-order it, because their pre-order prices are they go up after they release. I'm like,
It's like, I want this one, I want this one, I want this one, I want that one, and then 2 months later, oh, hey, here's some more. 2 years from now, but no, hey, pre-order now. It's like,
Well, they're not due to release until next June.
Yes.
But they are available for pre-order. But, you know, Christmas is coming, and, you know, somebody pre-ordering something on your behalf wouldn't necessarily be a bad Christmas present.
No.
Maybe a stocking stuffer.
How about a little IOU? Like, yeah.
Yes.
I like pre-order for on Christmas and it'd be there for my birthday-ish, maybe?
Yeah. Yeah.
June.
You know, maybe a little extra cash in your a little extra cash in your PayPal account, because that's how I pay for my big finish.
Mm-hmm. Big finish. Here's an idea. Gift cards.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, work internationally. Hey. That's part of why I do PayPal, because PayPal automatically converts, does all the currency conversion and all that stuff.
Yes.
And it works nice.
Yes.
So Big Finish, we love you. Holy cow. I mean, we've gushed about them many times before, but just every time I think, they're doing great. And then they come up with something here, Young War Doctor. And I'm like, what? I didn't know I wanted that, but now I want it. So give it to me, please. Mm-hmm. So, it's exciting. And I'm excited for this, because we didn't get near as much War Doctor as I would have liked.
Yeah.
Just, you know, here's to the fault of no one. I mean, no one.
No person we can.
No person, yes.
To the fault of cancer, who sucks.
Yes.
But, yeah.
Yes. But, yeah.
So, but, yeah. Just, Big Finish. You're killing me, Smalls.
Yes.
There's, that for the fandom news. I did want to real quick give a short recap of my weekend. I did post once on our Instagram, so if people maybe saw that and be like, oh, what is she doing? Chauncey's birthday, actually, as we're recording this, is tomorrow.
Happy birthday, Chauncey.
Hey, Chauncey.
Yep. since his birthday is in the middle of October and he loves Halloween and all sorts of things, but I'm not necessarily a huge fan of like haunted houses and stuff, so I was like, okay, what do you want to do for your birthday? The Rock Hall was actually on our short list of places to visit this summer when we were planning a short getaway, and then we ended up going to Wisconsin and seeing Holly. So this time around, Chauncey's like, oh, I want to do the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I was like, sweet. You know, it's like, why else would you go to Cleveland?
Definitely not to see the Browns.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There were lots of Browns fans out yesterday wandering around, though. Like the dog pack was out in full force. So we went to we left Friday, on the way there, we stopped in Dayton, where the Museum for the U.S. Air Force is, because Chauncey's really big into like military history and the space program. And I knew that this would be a good way to cover a lot of that, a good chunk of it for him. And even better, it's free. So if you need something free to do with the family and you can get to the Dayton area, there you go. And it's huge. Chauncey went there when he was a kid, and they just had up to the Cold War and like the first war in Iraq and all that. And so there was a whole other building now full of stuff that wasn't there when he was there when he was there as a kid. So that was exciting for him. But it goes chronologically. So it starts with like the invention of airplanes and, you know, the Wright brothers and all of that. Although one of the volunteers there, when we first got there, they were like, hey, have you visited here before? I'm like, no. And they're like, okay, well, what it's big. My suggestion is start in the back and work your way forward, because otherwise you're going to get so far and you're going to be really tired and you're just going to be like, no. So it's like, if you start at the back, then you have to come forward to leave.
That's so, a good, very good point.
So do it that way. So that's exactly what it is. We started at the back. That, and most people start in the front. So it's like the crowds. It was, by the time we got to the front, all the people that had been in the front had worked their way in the back. So we like bypassed all the people. So that was nice too. But yeah, it was really cool. There's some really neat looking planes from all sorts of areas. It's not just planes. There's helicopters. There's experimental prototypes for various things. There's this thing that they called it an astro car. And it looks like a UFO. It looks like a flying saucer is what it looks like. It's just this big silver circle with the two bubble like windows on top, and it just needed the little green men, and I would have been like, aliens. They have a number of presidential planes, and usually you can walk through those, but because right now of the pandemic and everything, you can't, just because they're too close quartered, so you wouldn't be able to safely socially distance. They do have a not replica of a space shuttle, but it's parts of a space shuttle that you can walk through because it's really big. So there's plenty of space for people to stand apart from each other. So that was really cool. If you know anyone that's like real big into like aviation or military history, or even just history or technology or stuff like that, highly, highly recommend the U.S. Air Force Museum in Dayton. And like I said, it's free. So free parking, free admission. Yeah, you can't go wrong with that. Just wear comfy shoes and bring a bottle of water with you if you're coming during the pandemic, because all the water fountains are closed and we got very thirsty at one point and desperately needed water, and we were far away from the one cafe that was open. So there's that. We got to Cleveland Friday night, and then Saturday morning we were up bright and early to go to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. We bought our tickets ahead of time. They were doing time ticketing. Highly, highly recommend buying your tickets ahead of time. We got the first the window as soon as the museum opens at 11 a.m. The location, parking is a bit difficult. There is a parking garage a couple of blocks away. I just did not know it, and I miss being able to turn into it. So, but if you go down the one road that goes to it, there is parking at the pier where the ferry boats are, which, because we got there so early, there was still plenty of parking. Kind of expensive. But it was okay. It wasn't necessarily that. It was kind of nice to park near the water. The seagulls flying around and cawing, and it was one of we made lots of references to these videos the entire weekend we were there. If you've ever seen their old viral videos, these things are like 10 years old now, but there's two of them. It's a hastily made Cleveland tourism videos. I'll put links to them in the show notes, but we were constantly making references to both of them.
Oh boy.
In one of the lines in one of the videos is, see the sun almost three times a year. And it just so happened Saturday, the sun was out. So I was like, hey, we're here on one of the 3 days the sun is out.
Lucky you.
Yeah. So that made for walking around not being so bad, having to walk, you know, all the way from the pier to the Rock Hall and all that. We saw a corgi on the way there too. Like, we were driving along and we look, and there's like people out walking their dogs, and we just happen to look over, and there's this guy with a corgi on a leash getting ready to cross the street at the crosswalk, and this adorable corgi, proportion wise, was like extra long, short legs, so he's like really trying to cross the street and he's couldn't because his legs are so short. It's so cute. Anyway,
and the little and the corgi wiggle like I'm trying to move this.
Yes. Yeah, he's like, come on dad, let's cross the street, let's go for walkies.
Must be part dachshund.
Yeah,
yes, yeah.
Kind of look that way, but this was pure corgi, I would know. But anyway, sometimes just some of them are a little more compact, some of them are a bit more stretched out, kind of like a slinky.
Yeah, yes. Right. I was just about to say, just like the dog from Toy Story.
Yeah. But anyway, so the Rock Hall, it is technically it's four stories. If you've ever seen the outside of the Rock Hall, where it's this giant like glass pyramid type looking thing, kind of looks like the Louvre.
Yes, just about to say that.
Yeah,
the Louvre, but except for rock and roll.
Exactly. but unlike Disney, where you may see a building that shape, but actually there's like a proper shaped building attached to it, this the shape is the shape, and therefore they have to fit like all the exhibits in that shape.
So it makes
navigating a little weird, especially right now with the pandemic. They have it set up so that they've roped certain doorways off to keep the flow of traffic going a certain way.
And probably why they have some of their Sirius XM DJs working from home and not there, because some of their stations are based out of the Rock Hall.
Yeah. Yeah. So there were a couple of spots as you get towards the top of the pyramid where the exhibit spaces get a little smaller. And you know, they put a lot of stickers and stuff on the ground, like 6 feet apart. So it's like, yeah, if you're standing here and someone else is standing on the next sticker, you know you're at least 6 feet apart and you still have to wear a mask and stuff. And they've got hand sanitizer dispensers like everywhere. Which was nice. But still there were a couple exhibit spots where it's like there's a lot of people here. So you're just really just trying to avoid like touching anybody except, you know, like the people you're with.
Right.
Meanwhile, you're trying to take 12 million pictures of Metallica's like full instrument set that's on display, which was really awesome. I haven't even downloaded.
And did you take, was that picture of a Pete Townsend smashed guitar?
Yes. Yeah, that is the one he smashed for the series of photographs shot by Annie Leibovitz.
Oh, nice.
Way back in the day, like the, it's like 12 steps on how to destroy a guitar. I think it's part of the series. So yeah, he did that as a, for a photo shoot, back in like the 60s or, you know, or the early 70s or whatever. And then they took that guitar and have encased it in amber, essentially, or lucite or whatever that is, and that guitar has been encased in that ever since. It was for a cover of Rolling Stone, I think. And Rolling Stone has like had that ever since, and now they've lent it to the Rock Hall. Did that, because there's a whole exhibit about, there a section about the destruction of musical instruments. There's like the guitar that Kurt Cobain destroyed once with the drill he used to help continue the destruction after he'd already broken it on the stage. Yeah, because it was so funny, because one of the lower floors we were on, there was a couple of pieces of The Who's like sound equipment. It was like a guitar and like a couple of amplifiers. I was like, hey, it's a couple of pieces that The Who didn't destroy.
Destroy. Yeah.
So they've got like, they've got an entire section dedicated to just instruments, like instruments by iconic people and their relative instruments. So there's like one of I can't think of his name. Jerry Lee Lewis's pianos.
That picture of Buddy Holly's guitar.
Holly's guitars. Lots of instruments by the Beatles, which of course made me very happy. Lots of John Lennon guitars and Paul McCartney, George and Ringo. like, yes, please, can I just stand here and drool? There's like Eric Clapton's acoustic guitar from his MTV Unplugged that he did.
Oh, nice.
Way back in the day. Mm-hmm. And then there's a whole section with like costumes and iconic like clothing and stuff. And I've got pictures of like a couple of David Bowie's outfits, which was really cool. So they've got one of Michael Jackson's sequin gloves in a turning display case with lights on it, so it's constantly sparkling like a disco ball. One of Elton John's like fuzzy, like vibrant colored fur coats.
Oh, nice. I'm surprised they didn't get the Donald Duck suit he wore one time he performed.
Yeah. I mean, there's a little bit of something for everybody. And the thing is like, don't let the name, like the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, like turn you off if you're like, oh, rock and roll. You're like, I'm not a big fan of rock and roll. Like a big chunk of musical like types are covered. Like there's a one section that I'm sure is one that they can rotate out, and it's what they use to display pieces from whoever the artists getting inducted for that year are on display. So like this year, like Whitney Houston is one of the inductees, so there's stuff from her. Nine Inch Nails is mm-hmm. they got stuff. The Notorious B.I.G. like, you when you think rock hall, you wouldn't think like hip-hop, but
no,
the Notorious B.I.G. is in the inductee class this year, so there's like a couple of his mm-hmm. suits. The man was huge. Mm-hmm. Like Chauncey and I could both fit in one of his suits. Yeah, there's a whole like section dedicated to like hip-hop and rap, and yep. there's stuff from mm-hmm. like NWA and like one of Flava Flav's clocks that he wore around his mm-hmm. neck, and a pair of Adidas shoes from Run DMC.
DMC, you know? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, and like there's like when you first come in, you go down essentially into the basement. That's like the first floor, and that's like the start of like the early influencers. So like your musical artists that came out of like the cotton fields and early blues and jazz, you know, people like Les Paul and country, and like so like Hank Williams Sr. and gospel and all sorts of things. And then it takes you through the different like hot beds of places where music seemed to explode, like the British Invasion, like Liverpool and San mm-hmm. Francisco with
Haight-Ashbury with the hippie in the 60s and 70s.
Yeah, exactly. So and of course like you're really big like tentpole artists when you think of like they're like, you know, this artist is the epitome of their thing. Like there's big sections dedicated, like Elvis has got a huge section dedicated to him. The Beatles and the Rolling Stones have a big section dedicated to themselves, which was really all the Beatles stuff. I was like, just leave me here for the entire weekend, please, so I can sit here and just look at every single little detail and read all the little signs and listen to the music and play and the audio from the interviews of the guys. And it was really funny to see some of the stuff. And if you look, like I said, if you looked at our Instagram, you would have seen the pictures. But you know, at our John Lennon deep dive, if you've listened to it, then you would know the significance of the pictures I posted, including mm-hmm. a couple of copies of the Daily Howl.
Yep.
And John Lennon. And John Lennon's green card.
Yeah, I was like, ooh, I know that topic and I know that topic. Yeah. I get these picture references.
Yeah.
Yes.
I kind of had to laugh. I'm like, hey, there's that green card he fought so long to get. It's right here on display in Cleveland. Thank you, Yoko Ono, for donating that.
Yes.
But yeah, in like you said, Metallica, they in the instruments where it's got all the iconic instruments. There's an entire big glass case where it's an entire set. So there's one of Rob's basses, one of Kirk's guitars, one of Lars's drum sets, and one of James's guitars. So it's like, you know, if Metallica mm-hmm. showed up, they could just take those out of the glass case, tune them, hook them up to some amplifiers, and they'd be ready to go. I'm like, this is awesome.
Little impromptu concert at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Yeah. Sign me up.
Yeah. There's a there's a short, like, 12-minute video that you can go watch. Again, they limit the number of people can go in the theater. They make you, you know, if you, however many are in your group, you can sit together, and then they'll put like a huge bench, you know, space in between you. But that was kind of cool because it's kind of a montage of clips from various inductee ceremonies.
Oh, nice.
So you get to see some footage I recognized, some I didn't. I was bobbing my head and singing along to most of us. If you've ever seen a Rock Hall inductee show, it's really awesome. Cool because it's like you have, if the artist is still alive, they will usually come. But what it is they don't just like come and be like, oh, thank you for this award, and that be the end of it. Like, they perform, and then they usually have like other artists that influence them come and perform. Mm-hmm. So like when Metallica got inducted, like they were there and they performed, but then they also performed with Ozzy. Yep. And now I can't think of I think it's the Clash.
That sounds right.
Yeah. I recognize the guys.
Kind of how I know this is for Christmas one year, my dad ordered the Time Life Rock Hall induction set.
Yeah.
So we sat and watched those. I mean, and then U2 inducted Bruce Springsteen.
Yeah.
And just to hear Bono wax poetic, I mean, it's just, it's,
yeah.
It's interesting. Yeah.
Or like when, there's a whole section where it has kind of like the equivalent of the foot and hand prints at Grauman's.
Yes.
But in this case, it's on the long, along the wall, and they're a lot smaller little plaques, but it has the band or artist name. And if they had like a distinctive like logo or font they used, it's used for that instead of just like, unless it's just like their name and then just use whatever font it is that they use standard. But like the Beatles, it's like that recognizable, and like Metallica, it's the Metallica font. You know, like the Who, it's got the bullseye. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it's the timeline of all the inductees from when they started doing it up till the most recent inductees, which would have been the 2019 last year. So you can go through each year and look and find the artist, and then it has it's engraved with their name if they're part of a band, and an engraving of a copy of their signature. So that was really cool. So it's like I found the Beatles, and then all four Beatles have all been inducted as individuals as well. So that was kind of cool to see them inducted, and like I found David Bowie and Queen and Metallica, of course. But like I'm saying, the clips, if you want to get goosebumps, this still gives me goosebumps no matter how many times I've seen this. Watch George Harrison's induction, which was after George had passed, unfortunately.
Yes.
But it's at the time who was still alive from the Traveling Wilburys, which was essentially
Tom Petty
and the other guy whose name,
Jeff Lynne.
Name I can never remember. Sorry, Jeff Lynne. who went to the moon that nobody remembers your name.
And I think his son Danny was there.
Yeah, Danny was there. They're performing My Guitar Gently Weeps and Prince.
Yes, Prince steals Prince, the show.
Oh my God, just thinking
one.
About it, I'm getting goosebumps. Yeah. So, yeah.
I can remember sitting watching the night that it aired on HBO. Both my dad and I, we both just turned and looked at each other and just like, holy cow.
Yeah. So like, that's moving. It's also kind of sad to watch to be like some of these clips and be like, well, that person's no longer with us. Like that George Harrison, like Tom Petty's no longer with us, and neither is Prince.
Right. Exactly.
Like, that's such an iconic performance. And now two more of those people in that performance are no longer with us. Like Aretha Franklin, she's no longer with us too. And they're like,
right, yeah.
It was like, oh. I mean, if you're just a fan of music, popular music, go. If you look at it, it's kind of expensive. It's almost $30 a person. But if you're a huge fan of music, I think
it's worth the price of admission.
Every penny. You know, depending on when you go, they'll swap out exhibits. So you may see different things than what Chauncey and I got to see. Like, I would have, you know, there's like things that I would have liked to, you know, artists to see more representation of. Like, there was barely anything from Queen.
Because I think
on display, because it's been put in storage for now and will be brought out
right
for something else more appropriate, you know, down the line. Mm-hmm. He's like, I thought they had one of the Doris, that's the giant Lady Justice mm-hmm. from the Injustice for All right. Metallica album. They have a giant Doris that she would be on the stage when they were touring for Injustice for All. And Chauncey's like, I thought they had a Doris head on display. I'm like, well, they probably did, but she's probably in archive right now and mm-hmm. bring her out for something else when it's more appropriate. So it's like, you know, if I went again, like next year, there may be a whole bunch of Queen stuff on display.
Right.
The Bowie stuff may be put away. So I don't, yeah. you know, I don't
they,
know.
They don't, they want you to come back. They don't want you to yeah. just be- Oh, I've seen it, so now I don't have to ever see it again.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. But like I said, it is kind of expensive, but you know, if you're a fan, I mean, if you're going to go just for like, you know, like I just want to see the Metallica stuff, then it's probably you're probably not going to find it worth your time and your money. But if you are excited to see like the artists you know and love, mm-hmm. but then also just excited of music history in general, then I think you'll find it way more worth the time in your mind. We were there for 3.5, almost 4 hours, and it would have been longer if some of the more interactive exhibits had been opened for us to play around with stuff. Like, there are some interactive things that they still kept open. Like you could still vote. You could register your name and your email and vote for who you think should be inducted. I voted for Weird Al. He's been eligible for so long. Why has he not been inducted yet?
Oh, there's so many bands. Me.
Yeah.
I mean, like REO Speedwagon, I think Styx hasn't been inducted yet.
There are some artists where like they were part of a band and then went solo that they have not have been inducted as a solo artist yet. So like right. I saw they have a screen and it'll show you like the top like 100 vote getters and show you how many votes they have at the time, and it's constantly updating. And like high up there is like Freddie Mercury as a solo artist,
right?
Queen has been inducted, so
right. And guys, don't count out the little grassroots voting to get artists in. It worked for Bob Seger. He got inducted. It does work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So like tweets and emails. You know, mm-hmm. all the like, because it is other than, you know, it has to be an artist who has made, and of course this is subjective, a significant contribution to music, mm-hmm. And they don't necessarily have to be a performer either. Like there's music critics that have been mm-hmm. inducted. There have been people that are just songwriters that right. have been inducted. You know, if you're like, you know, you find you go through like your grandmother's attic and you discover her old records of some unknown like bluegrass musician from like the 1920s or something that had a big influence and has not been recognized, they can be inducted as an early influencer.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think they even have like a portion of the Hall of Fame for like the technical end of things for producers and that. So it's not just the artists per.
Yeah. It's not just the one selling records.
Right. Which is good.
Yeah. Yeah. And like I said, it does not have to necessarily be rock and roll. So like I said, like big, you know, Biggie Smalls is getting inducted this year. So, you know, it could be a hip hop artist or, you know, a rapper.
Because I think LL Cool J was in the running for nomination.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't make it in, but it was his first year to have a chance to get in.
Yeah, yeah. They only have to be, the only stipulation is it has to have been 25 years since their first commercial released album, yep. If they're a performer.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So, like I said, Weird Al has been eligible for quite a long time because it's been way yeah. more than 25 years. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he was up there. He was in the top 50, I think. But yeah. I was like, I was like, who would you like to nominate? And like WE, and it automatically filled it in for me. And then it'll tell if they're eligible or not, if they're in the database. And like, he's eligible. I'm like, damn right he is. Vote. Yeah.
Or okay, you forgot. They've already been inducted.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Just in case you forgot.
Yeah.
Just checking.
Yes.
Yep.
Maybe Weird Al's one of those that people are kind of like, because they think rock and roll, you know, they've got all their traditional rock and roll groups and singers that they think of. And then they're like, oh yeah, Weird Al, he's a thing. And then they forget. So
yeah.
It might not be that he's been snubbed. It just maybe he's not on the forefront of people's minds. Which
right. And I'm surprised Dr. Demento hasn't been in for early influencer. I mean, sure, he's a disc jockey. But
yeah, but as a DJ, you would think that
yeah
he could be in there at least as an influencer of some sort or exactly. as a DJ.
Yeah exactly.
So. We'll do two listeners, votes then. Dr. Demento.
Listeners, if he's already inducted and I didn't know, I'm sorry, I did not pull up the Rock Hall to do search. So
yeah. And if he's not, we'll start a campaign for both.
Yes, exactly. Ooh, that would be good. Have him inducted at the same time.
Yeah. So, but yeah, so that was the Rock Hall. That was awesome. And then yesterday before we left Cleveland to come home, we did spend some time on, unfortunately the sun disappeared. So we did not get, the second time this year to see the sun. but that's okay. It was kind of cold, kind of rainy, kind of gross. But we just bundled up and you know, it's like, whatever. So we went into, first we drove around, one of the neighborhoods near the university and the hospitals looking for spots, and kind of it was hit and miss. Cleveland's got some weird, very strange intersections which make navigating some of the roads a little difficult. So there's a couple of spots where it's like we're just not gonna be able to get to that street today, maybe some other time. But then we went into downtown Cleveland proper and parked, and then just walked for a couple hours. Me using the reference sheet on my phone. I'll post links to the couple of websites I used as kind of my references. But for those that don't know, Cleveland, Ohio, of all places in the world, is actually where they filmed a good chunk of the Battle of New York for the first Avengers movie. and some of Winter Soldier, too. Captain America Winter Soldier was actually filmed in parts of Cleveland as well. So, of course, being in Cleveland and, you know, it's Marvel, it's the MCU. We could not leave without scoping out some of the filming locations. So that was quite fun to, and of course, Chauncey is not nearly as in, you know, indoctrinated as I am. So I was constantly having to remind him of what scenes and stuff. Some he really remembered, like when we got to the public square, which was used as the exterior location during the Stuttgart sequence with Loki, when Loki surrounds the crowd and makes them kneel to him. Like, that's really recognizable. It was really cool to be standing there and like, it's like, yeah, all those years ago, Tom Hiddleston was here with all these extras yelling at them, telling them to kneel.
And then the one little old man stand up and said, no.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's like over here, it's not, it wasn't real, so they just had to, it was fake, but it's like over here was Tony's shawarma place that he really wanted to go to, and it's like over here is where Cap rescued those civilians and then got blown out the window, and it's like over here is where Thor and Cap were working together, fighting together, and it was like, oh, you getting tired? So, yeah, and we drove by some of the other places, like the I can't remember the official name of the place, but it's essentially like the Cleveland like History Museum. That's what they used for the Smithsonian to work as the Smithsonian and Winter Soldier, where they had the Captain America exhibit and Steve steals his uniform and Stanley has his cameo. It's like, I'm so fired. We tried to find Nick Fury's hiding place where he goes to after he quote unquote dies. The GPS took me to the address that I got off of one of the websites, but that was not it. And I was looking at it after we got home, and I'm going to have to look on the map and see how close we were. Like, you know, if maybe we just gone like another road over, if we would have found it, because it took us to like this lake. And we got to see some loons, which was fun because those are funny looking birds. but there's supposed to be a dam there. So it's in the cemetery. It's a legit cemetery. It's like the one of the Cleveland like old cemeteries. It's obviously it's very old, judging from the looks of some of the crypts and stuff. And I don't know if they actually shot like Nick Fury's like faux grave in that cemetery or not. I didn't see anything on any of the websites that said that they did, but that doesn't mean that they didn't. So yeah, we didn't quite find it. We tried to find Sam Wilson's, the house used for the stand-in for Sam's house. Couldn't find it because of traffic and other things. We tried to find old Peggy's house. Again, couldn't get to it because of traffic and construction and all sorts of other things. We did find the church that was used for Sam's veteran support group in Winter Soldier, but I haven't been able to find any good screenshots to compare to the pictures I took. So I'm going to have to go to the actual movie itself, I think. And because I was just using, if you go on my personal social media, you will see some of the pictures I posted with screenshots versus the pictures that I took while it was there. And those screenshots I just got from those websites. So those aren't my screenshots. but yeah. And then there's a couple other spots that are outside of Cleveland, like the military base, the abandoned military base where Steve and Natasha go to and find the uploaded mind of Zola in the computer and find out about Hydra's infiltration into SHIELD. That's actually near the Ohio border to Pennsylvania. So that was a bit too far east for us. So if I thought of it, we could have possibly gone by it last year. We were going by that way, but oh well. But yeah, but still, even though we didn't get to check them all off, it was still just kind of cool to be like, this is in the MCU. Like I can't imagine what it was like when they were filming these, down to I remember seeing the pictures, some of the pictures when they were filming the first Avengers of them on, I think it's 9th Street, downtown Cleveland, where they're doing like the big explosions, like there's a big explosion and like the cop car flies end over, front over end. Yeah, that's all on 9th Street, I believe. So it was kind of just cool to stand there and just like look up and down 9th Street and be like, this is where the Battle of New York took place. we were driving around the campus, the college campus, looking for like the museum that stood in as the Smithsonian. There's the art museum that the inside of it, unfortunately we couldn't go into it because it wasn't open, but the inside of it, the lobby of it, is the lobby for the Triskelion. And then there's another government building that is the lobby for it was used as the interior of that building during the Stuttgart sequence where Loki kills that guy at that like, fancy cocktail party. But it was a Sunday, so government building's closed. but it was still kind of cool to go by them and be like, could you imagine what it was like to be like if you were like a student at this college when they were filming like the stuff for Winter Soldier and be like, Captain America's at my school. I just saw him run down the street. Like, I can't imagine what that would have been like. Like, they don't do that stuff in Indiana. Because we don't look like any other city. We just look like Indianapolis. We can't stand in for other cities. So, dear MCU, if you ever want to have a story take place in Indianapolis, I know you sent Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. to Muncie, but you didn't actually film that in Muncie. So, just saying. But anyway, so that was Chauncey's birthday weekend, our weekend in Cleveland. So, nerd card. Nerd dial turned all the way up to 11. Thank you, Spinal Tap.
It's always been a place for me that I want to visit. I just never made it out there yet.
Yeah. Yeah. Because if you think of if you're a huge fan of the MCU and stuff, you're going to be like, oh, yeah, that stuff's filmed in Los Angeles and New York. And some of it is. And a lot of it's filmed at sound studios in places like Atlanta. But it's on a studio lot, so it's not so someplace you can go. But then occasionally they do film in places that can, with some strategically placed camera angles and the digital replacement of buildings and building fronts and signs and stuff that they can make other cities look like other cities. In this case, turn Cleveland, of all places, into New York City.
It's cheap, probably cheaper to film there.
Oh yeah, yeah, and a lot easier to close down streets too.
That's yeah,
yeah,
yeah, yeah. But so yeah, yeah. So don't discount your little seemingly not maybe most metropolitan type places to visit. It's like anybody can go to Los Angeles or New York, but go to Cleveland and stand on 9th Street, and you're like. Battle New York right here.
Here, yep.
Thank you very much.
Like, I'm standing in the same spot.
Yeah, it was like standing there and there's like Browns fans walking around because it's Sunday. So there's the Browns weren't playing in Cleveland, but it doesn't matter. They were still dressing their Browns garb and walking around, and I had my Marvel vest that has all the shield patches and stuff on it. They had my shield hat on, and I was like, well, they're walking around supporting their team and I'm supporting my team. This is my favorite team. The Avengers. Forget football.
Who needs sports ball?
Yeah.
The Avengers are probably going to win.
Yeah.
Yes.
Although I have heard the Browns have been a little better this year, but
it's 2020. That's what we're just talking
about. It's 2020. Yes.
Yeah. That's what Chauncey and I were talking about. I was like, actually, I think the Browns fans don't know quite to do with themselves because they actually have a winning record at the moment. And he's like, well, it is 2020. I was like,
that
yeah.
was one of the signs of the apocalypse is Cleveland Browns.
Well, we decided, we decided that just, with the way the year's going, just let Cleveland, let the Browns have their moment and just have them. Sail on through the rest of the season, go into the playoffs, make it all the way to the Super Bowl. And if they lose the Super Bowl, then we know the universe has righted itself back.
Yes.
So
I'm okay.
Sorry, Browns fans, but mm-hmm. we're using your team as a temperature gauge on just how screwed up the universe is.
Yeah.
and honestly, a lot of them would probably say the same thing.
They'd be like, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right.
We know.
Wait a minute.
Yeah. I worked with a guy who was a huge Browns fan, and he was like Cubs fans, where it's like they just didn't give up. No matter how bad the team was, they're like, there's all
the guy. There's something about that you have to respect.
Yep.
Yep.
You're not a bandwagon jumper. You stick with your team through thick and thin. And you know what? My hat's off to you and all y'all who still cheer for the Factory of Sadness.
Yes.
I mean, the Packers, I'm in the late 80s, before they got Favre, they had some rough years. Mm. And same way, diehard, there's always next year.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So, yep. I can sympathize.
Anyway.
Yep.
So. Yay for Cleveland trip.
Yeah. Yes. So when someone's like, Cleveland, what's there to do in Cleveland?
There you go.
So let's do feedback real quick. So we got some feedback from Shalane. She says that she too she likes the Black Cauldron. She loves Gurgi and Henwen and our princess, not princess, jury's out. Although, as she said previously, that animation in the 80s is kind of scary and creepy. I will give her that. It is kind of creepy, you know, and it would have been creepier if Tim Burton had stayed on the project.
Yes.
And then, you know, as we were talking about how the if they not made those changes, that the Black Cauldron could have potentially been rated R. And this is probably something that actually we'll talk about when we talk about the Eisner era, because it's they're in the same time in the 80s, how Disney created their spinoff movie production company Touchstone, and that's what they used to release like their PG-13 and R-rated movies.
Yep.
So that is essentially adult Disney. Have you ever seen anything released by Touchstone?
Yep. Three Men and a Baby, all those good ones.
Yep.
I think even like Nightmare Before Christmas was on the Touchstone at the beginning, if I remember right.
It may have been.
I think I remember seeing that logo at, like, on the VHS tape.
Maybe.
I could be totally wrong.
Yeah. I don't have it on VHS, so I don't know. We'll do Nightmare Before Christmas at some point.
Oh, yeah. I used to. I don't have it now, but.
Yeah. Question is, will we do it for Halloween or Christmas?
Yeah.
Wait and see.
Or do we
say November in between?
Yeah.
Or do we split it into two, into part one Halloween, yeah, part two in Christmas?
Yeah. Or we'll just split the difference and do it at Thanksgiving.
That works. I like how you think.
Oh. Yeah, I watch it both, but I also do watch it around Thanksgiving too.
Yeah.
And I looked up real quick. I was right. Touchstone.
Oh, cool.
There you go. Good memory.
Yes.
Shalane has.
I could just wonder. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Oh no, you're fine. Hey. Yeah. It's like, yeah. Yeah. Sometimes saying, the like, memory. I you're like. Yeah. It's like, do I trust my memory or no?
I very rarely trust my memory. Like, yeah.
Well, this time you were right.
Triple check. Yes. Like.
Yeah. Shalane has some requests for topics. So she wants us to talk about the Disney Renaissance, and movies like The Little Mermaid. We've kind of done Aladdin already. So we can probably check that off. Hercules, but then she would also like to talk about movies like The Great Mouse Detective, Treasure Planet, The Princess and the Frog, and Ooh. Moana.
We'll pencil those in somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Those definitely.
Treasure, yeah. Especially Treasure Planet.
Another underappreciated Disney movie.
Yes.
It is. With Michael J. Fox as one of the lead voices. Mm-hmm.
No, that's Atlantis.
That's yeah. Atlantis. Oh, okay, sorry.
No, Atlantis is a good one too, but
yes, yeah, that is another underappreciated one.
Treasure Planet was a different one. Sometimes yep. I get those two confused and I don't know why I shouldn't.
Yeah, like one's under the ocean and one's in space.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But no, you're right. I mean, they're both a lot of fun and just yeah. didn't really
yeah. And I think The Great Mouse Detective, I think, is kind of a sleeper too.
Yes, I love it.
That's one of my all-time favorites.
That was
yeah.
one
all the time as a kid.
We would we rented that one a lot when I was little, and
Bloodhound. I love yeah. the Bloodhound.
And I don't ever remember, I mean, I never really thought of it as, oh, you know, this isn't very good or it's underappreciated. I'm like, it's a Great Mouse Detective. I love this one.
You have yep. Vincent Price voicing the villain, for crying out loud.
Yes. Oh, I know. It's like, it, how can you
that
not
villain
this?
Scared me so much when I was little. Like
Redigan.
Like I wasn't terrified of rats before then, but then when I watched that,
yeah.
it's like, no.
Yep. So yeah, we will add those to the list and get to them at some point.
Yes.
So, but yeah, definitely the Disney Renaissance, again, that's part of the Eisner era. So it will get touched on at least a little bit. So, mm-hmm. but then it probably deserves its own deep dive, just it.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then deep dives into all the movies that were part of that Renaissance.
Yeah. Yes.
We are not wanting for topics.
Yeah,
no, we aren't. We have topics and content aplenty.
Yeah, well, it kind of helps. As I mentioned in the last episode, the Disney company is coming up on its 100th anniversary. So there's essentially 100 years of content.
Yes.
And tangents and squeeze galore. Just from one company.
Yeah, whether we're doing movie reviews or the behind-the-scenes...
Mm-hmm. Drama.
I was like, I was gonna yeah. say like gossip. I'm like, no, it wasn't gossip, not really, but
no. There may have been gossip, but no, the drama was real.
Yes.
Yeah. Yep. So thank you, Shalane.
Yes.
You know we love reading. But sometimes it's hard to find time to physically sit down with a book, which is why the Five-ish Fangirls has proudly partnered with Audible. Audible is a leading provider of spoken word entertainment and audiobooks, ranging from bestsellers to celebrity memoirs. Whatever makes you squee, there's a perfect listen for you. Every month, members get one credit to pick any title, plus two Audible originals. Whether you're adventuring through time and space, running from dinosaurs, or capturing ghosts, with the free app, audiobooks go where you go. You can download titles and listen offline, anytime, anywhere. Even if you switch devices, you'll never lose your place. And right now, Five-ish Fangirls listeners can sign up for a free 30-day trial by going to audibletrial.com/fiveishfangirls. That's 30 days to check out not only their huge collection of audiobooks, but also podcasts, guided wellness programs, theatrical performances, A-list comedy, and exclusive Audible originals you won't find anywhere else. So continue the joy of reading with Audible. Don't see a title that trips your trigger one month? No problem. Your credit will roll over to the next month, and you can quit anytime and keep the books you've acquired forever. For more details and to sign up for your free 30-day trial, visit audibletrial.com/fiveishfangirls. That's audibletrial.com/fiveishfangirls. And now, back to the podcast. And speaking of Disney and sleeper films,
holy cow.
Yeah. Again, another one that did not do well at the time when it was released, but has since become a cult classic.
Mm-hmm.
And very, very appropriate for the time frame because we are coming up on Halloween.
Yes.
Is the oh so classic Disney movie Hocus Pocus.
Hocus.
Twist the bones and bend the back.
Eat it, Captain Malachimistic.
Back in 1693, the people of Salem, Massachusetts.
Witches!
Yes?
Thought they got rid of the Sanderson sisters for good.
We shall be back!
100 years later, it's Halloween Eve, and they're back.
Uh-oh. We are home.
Are you broads a little old to be trick-or-treating?
We're talking about three ancient hags versus the 20th century. How bad can it be?
Now they're digging up old friends. And running amok. Looking for the one thing they miss most.
You stay for supper.
I'm not hungry.
But we are.
Only one boy has the power to stop them.
Prepare to die again.
You have no powers here, you fool.
Before all Salem falls under their spell.
Hello, you.
Walt Disney Pictures presents Bette Midler.
Hello.
Sarah Jessica Parker.
Would thou dance with me?
And Kathy Najimy. Hocus Pocus.
Into the night!
They love to fly. And it shows.
Good night. Sleep tight. No screaming.
It's a bunch of Hocus Pocus.
I remember this coming out. I did not see it in theaters because I think it came out in the summer.
Yes.
And I think you're right. Yeah.
They wanted to release it when kids would be out of school.
Yes. Which, okay. Yeah. July, you were like, oh, let's go to a Halloween movie. Kind of doesn't work. But yeah, this is one we would rent a lot, or it would be on, later it was on like Disney Channel and stuff like that. And
yep.
Yeah, I'd watch this at least once a year at Halloween. And I mean, some of the jokes flew over my head. Like I was reading on TV Tropes how they just kept, you know, going on about how terrible it was that they belabored the point that Max was a virgin. And I'm like, they did? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, okay, sort of, but it really wasn't that big of a deal, and I just didn't know what it was. That's when I was like eight or nine.
I didn't even realize what it was. I think I thought it was meant like a boy or something because it was with him. So like, he was the only boy in that group.
Well, the funny thing is, like, because his sister keeps harping on it too, and it's like she's eight, she doesn't know. But anyway, but the whole thing, it's just, it's a great, fun Halloween movie. It's a little campy, but it's meant to be campy.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And the casting for all three of the sisters was sheer.
Yeah, I mean, you can't get. I mean, some of the other casts, some of them have gone on to become actually fairly well known actors in their own right. Like Thora Birch, she's gone on to have a decent career. Sean Murray has gone
McGee.
On. Yeah. gone McGee. On to be on NCIS. So he's done pretty good. Doug Jones, you might not know him by his face because most of the time he's not acting in a way you can see his face, but trust me, you have probably seen at least one other thing that Doug Jones has been. He's from
India. Yes.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Hello, Doug. I know people who know him.
yes.
So, you know, he's like Andy Serkis, where like he just, he's one of those people where he's a brilliant actor, but not for being himself. He's one of those chameleons.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That just, like,
oh,
he can disappear into
guy.
A role. Yeah.
Yeah.
And be that guy. But then the Sanderson sisters, you've got Kathy Najimy, who at that time was kind of a big name. She's in Sister Act, one and two.
Mm-hmm.
You got Sarah Jessica Parker, who Sex and the City was not a thing yet. I don't believe.
No, it was a few more years before that was.
Yeah. But still, she was starting, her star was starting to rise. And then you've got literally the divine Miss M.
Yes.
Midler.
Yes.
You know, triple threat.
Returning
star
to the
of stage and screen and anything
and
everything.
And returning to the Disney fold in non-animated form.
Yes. Although those two roles, she has said, are her two favorite in her entire career.
Yeah.
And being Winifred Sanderson and
Georgette
in Oliver and Company.
Yep. Yeah, and I believe if I remember right, she explicitly said she did Hocus Pocus so like her kids could see her in a role. Like actually see her, not just, you know, hear her voice.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's kind of funny just how big Hocus Pocus has become over the years. Because yeah, at the time it was just like, you know, Disney, they'll do these live action movies and they're not like Disney live action, they're not known for their live action generally. And so they kind of feel like just sort of throwaway movies almost on a certain level. But then you have things like Hocus Pocus where it just, and maybe it's because it's a Halloween movie and, you know, Halloween, you're always kind of looking for, I mean, you've got horror movies, which, you know, the slasher ones, which some people like, I do not. And then there's the ones that you want that are just kind of spooky, but not like gory or gross or something like that. Something you can watch with the kids or, you know, if you're not into the super R-rated gore fest, like I'm not. So, you know. Well, here's a story about these three witches who come back 300 years later. And it's kind of funny that it's sort of, you know, it takes place in Salem and you think, you know, Salem witch trials and even has the right time period and all this stuff. And it's like, but if you want to learn about the Salem witch trials, this is not the movie you want.
Well, yeah. No.
But I like how they take something like that from history and they are explicitly like, not being historical about it, like at all. The most history, quote unquote history, is just that first bit at the beginning. And it kind of feels a little bit like the Disney version of Sleepy Hollow, where it's, you know, it's a ghost story. It's a, you know, a legend, it's a myth, and it's not, they don't go all historical with it, and they're it explicitly, it's supposed to be fun and lighthearted, and yes, there are some scary moments, but not so much that your kids are going to have nightmares at night, at least not if they're old enough.
Yeah.
Right.
And it's so many years later, 30 some odd years, well, yeah, we're getting up on 30 years, holy cow.
Yeah.
It's very, there's a lot of things that are very 90s about it, but then in some ways let me back up. Back to the Future is like this, where, you know, it takes place in the 80s, but because of the way, you know, the way the story goes, it doesn't date itself so much because it's, you know, going back and forth in time.
Yeah.
And Hocus Pocus, because, you know, you've got the witches who are, you know, in their witch outfits, Danny, the little sister, she's in her Halloween costume for all of the movie. Allison, she's just kind of in a cardigan and jeans sort of outfit. It's like their clothes don't really date anything, or like the car that they drive to the house at the end of the
it's just an old clunker. So
well my mom had a car just like that,
yeah.
at that same time, like even the same color, so that that one I'm like, okay, that's 90s.
Yeah,
but the rest of it, it's like I routinely forget that, oh, this is a movie that takes place in the 90s, until like she says, you know, oh, we're in 1993, we're 300 years, those kind of things. And, you know, there's a lack of cell phones and stuff like that, but it doesn't feel dated to me. Yeah. It's kind of what I'm
at. It doesn't hurt it any that some of the fashion that the kids wear is now back in style.
True. Yeah. True enough. I mean, the bullies,
like,
I mean,
the
they
bucket
just
hat.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Well, I mean, the bullies, they're just bullies. So they dress weird anyway.
Yeah.
But it's just, I mean, and everyone's in Halloween costumes. So it's just, it's a timeless Halloween movie. So there's not a lot that dates it.
Yeah.
And like you said, the casting is great. The Sanderson sisters none of them look alike, but you kind of don't care because they look ridiculous.
That's because they all have the same mother, but a different father.
Yes, I read that.
Something that is explained. If we'll get into a lot of the trivia and behind the scenes here, but if you've got Disney Plus and you've not checked, you can watch the movie just as is. It's on Disney Plus, but then if you go into the whatever it is, extras, I forget what the tab is called.
It's either extras or details.
Yeah, something like that. But there is another version you can watch that is, it's not interactive, but it's like, if you don't care about the actual, like, watching the movie and hearing all the lines, like, there's like trivia, like literal trivia.
It's trivia and treats edition.
It's, yeah, it's trivia and treats, but then there's like actual trivia. They'll put up facts and figures. They'll put like picture in picture and have like behind the scenes, like video of like a certain scene. They'll show you like what it looked like as they were actually filming it. There'll be interviews with the cast and the director and all sorts of things. So it gives you a whole other layer to it. And yeah, it explains in there when they first go to the Sanderson house, because, you know, Max doesn't believe in all of it, and he's trying to, you know, convince Allison to make him a believer. And the scene was a lot more extended, and she explains that the Sanderson sisters all have the same mother, but they have a different father. Winifred's father was a warlock. Mary's was a literal bloodhound, which is why she sniffs out the children. And I forget what Sarah's father was, but I think he was essentially the town idiot.
Yeah, it's the village idiot.
Yeah, he was the village idiot, so, which is why she's so dumb. I thought that was funny. I was like, oh, that explains so much. But then why they get all wistful when they were like, oh, if mother could see us now, and then they're like, oh, mother. Yeah. So, but anyway, sorry. Back to what you were saying, Chrissy.
Now I forgot.
No, sorry.
Oh no, I must have finished it.
There's probably gonna be a lot of bouncing around in this discussion.
Yeah, basically my point is it still holds up. I mean,
yeah.
If you look at Binks too closely, you can tell, you know, he's CGI, he's animated. But at the same time, I was like, for the time, the CGI holds up really well. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's because he's a black cat, so black doesn't show the flaws quite as much or something. But yeah, I just,
that's the power of black hides all,
yeah,
the flaws.
Hides all the flaws, yes. And then, but then they, you know, they have all the, I remember the scene where Billy is chasing after him, and he's trying to come, they're coming up through the sewer, and the bus runs over him, and his fingers come off.
And his middle finger is just a little higher than the others.
Yes, yes. And I'm like, and like all those practical effects. And I'm like, it's one of those movies that you can tell it wasn't like, you know, lovingly rendered or anything like that. But it's like they took care to put this together and to make it fun. And so it's, I don't know. I'm just, you know, rewatching it this past weekend, I was like, I'm just amazed how well it holds up, even with the effects and things like that. So it's like this. I mean, the story definitely would have been different if it was made now, but they could have made this now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's one of my favorites, and we love it. And we went and saw my family a couple weekends ago, and their local theater, little theater, was showing Hocus Pocus, and my niece was all like, yeah, we saw this on ABC Family the other night, or whatever it is, Freeform. Mm-hmm. Now we saw it last night, but we want to go see it on the big screen. And my niece is like 9. And I'm just like, oh, you sweet child, I saw this for the first time when I was your age. And I'm so glad you love it. And you know, they're singing, my niece and nephew are going like amok amok amok. And I'm like, oh, I love you too, it's wonderful.
Yeah,
passing the torch, as it were.
Yeah, it's yeah, speaking of amok amok, because like I said, this is kind of an underappreciated, what's funny is, yeah, I don't give much credence to scoring, you know, ratings and stuff, but if you go to Rotten Tomatoes, it has an audience score of 71%, which seems kind of low to me, actually. But then it's tomato meter, which I think is the
It's the, like, critic,
it's the critics.
The actual critics.
Yeah, actual critics. 37% score.
Well,
yeah. The
that doesn't surprise me.
Yeah. Well, and there are ratings from all sorts of. A lot of them are semi-recent, but some of them are kind of old. What is it? One of them. Gene Siskel called it dreadful. Somebody else there's one that I read and I was like, really? This is the, but it wasn't a critic review. It was an audience review, but they called it, I can't find it. I lost it. But anyway, I forget what exactly the quote was, but one of the things they said is they called it unquotable. Like, really? This movie is really unquotable?
I quote it.
I quote it quite a bit.
Yeah.
I was going to say,
I do too. I'm just like.
Even non-Halloween, like, all the time, like, I find ways to have it go into, like, normal life.
Yeah. I know, I'm trying to think of the lines I do. It's like, there's that bit where Winnie is just like, oh, she really hurt my feelings.
Yeah.
I've always wanted a child, and I think I've had one. On toast! I always say on toast.
Yes.
But I'm making toast, okay? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, dumb things like that. Or,
and I like, the beginning.
Or, you know, when the little girl who's dressed up as an angel, she goes, bless you.
Yes.
And curtsies. there's just these little bits that just kind of stick in your head, and then, you know, when you're feeling silly or whatever.
Well, and then Gary and Penny Marshall making
cameo
appearances. Uncredited cameo appearances is the...
Well, and you know, that scene, like, I was watching it again, and, you know, they have that bit where Mary's sitting down and the TV's on and there's the ad with the baby.
Yeah.
Going all over.
Which is an old, like, carpet stain removal.
Yeah. Yes. Like, I remember that ad. And I'm like, this scene could be so campy because, you know, Winifred goes into the kitchen. She's like, it's a torture chamber. And I'm like, this could be so dumb. But the way that all three of the girls, all three of the ladies sell it, you know, mm-hmm. and then Sarah's in there dancing with the devil, with Master.
Yeah. Yes.
it's just the way they interact with a modern day Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, you know, and Mary's freaking out because she can't, because she smells children, but she can't see it. and they're just trying to figure all this out and how they're gonna, you know, get their spell, or, you know, get enough, you know, souls of children so they don't die. I'm just like, you know, I know they're the villains, and I know that I'm not supposed to root for them, but gosh, they're so fun to watch.
Oh, I know.
All these dumb things that if it had been in another movie, because I've seen that, you've seen that trope before where, you know, someone from the past comes to the future, and, you know, they mistake all these things for, you know, for what they are or what they're not. And it's like, it's not done very well very often, but this one, it's silly, but it works. And it's just... And because it's silly and because it's supposed to be campy and funny, it all works together for the thing. But then they're still scary because they're going after children. They want to kill children. Mm-hmm. And I think that's part of why that you're like, okay, when they lose in the end, you're okay with it, even though you've spent most of this movie liking them and liking what they do and stuff like that. I mean, heck, I just found a picture of somebody dressed their three dogs. It's the Sanders. Mm-hmm.
Yes, that is. Oh, and that middle dog is so channeling.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Just that look, like, really?
Yep. So, you know, yeah, they're the villains. Yeah, they're going after kids. They're still fun to watch. They're still So, and you can tell the actresses were enjoying themselves.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's like, yeah, the chemistry that those three have together is just like,
yeah,
brilliant.
It might not be Shakespeare, but no one cares.
Yep. Nope. Yeah. I don't want Shakespeare.
No. And it's nice to see Bette Midler and Kathy and Jimmy team up again in a different movie, because I love the chemistry that they had. Or wait a minute, I'm sorry, I'm thinking Sister Act. They weren't together. That was Whoopi Goldberg. No. Sorry.
Yeah. Hey. No, but Kathy was a huge Bette Midler fan. So, yes. When she found out that that's who she'd be working with for this movie, she's like, but she actually said that she took some of the nervous energy that she had and channeled that into Mary. And that's why Mary always seems like cowering Winifred, because the part of that is that Kathy was like, oh my God, I'm working with Bette Midler.
And now that you say that, that makes sense. Cause I remember in the beginning when Mary's like, Winnie, I smell a child. And Winnie goes, and what does thou call that? And she goes, a child. And you can tell like she's, you know, drawing into herself because Winnie is yelling at her.
I'm like, don't hit me, but.
Yeah. Now that makes sense. Yeah. I love stuff like that when you can. And it's a good performance, so it's supposed to be, it is what it's supposed to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just watching some of the behind-the-scenes stuff, not just what is on the Disney Plus version, but other stuff on, like, YouTube.
Yeah.
Just watching and learning about the behind-the-scenes stuff, it was like, they just look like they had so much, so much fun.
And Sarah Jessica Parker really loved her time in the harness.
Yes! All the harness work they had to do for anytime the witches were flying on their brooms or vacuums or mops. Sarah Jessica loved it so much that in between takes, instead of having to lower her down and get her unbuckled and everything, she's just like, just hand me a book, I'll just stay up here. And so she did.
Bette Midler was the exact opposite.
Yeah. Kathy was somewhere in the middle. So
she's like, I'll bring me my lunch up here.
Yeah.
Yes. Bring me my knitting.
Yeah. Yeah. That's exactly the way it was. So but the director Kenny Ortega, he had worked with Bette already on Beaches, I think.
That sounds right.
Yeah. So he already knew her. Although she wasn't the first choice for Winifred, because actually the story had a different title. Actually, it was gonna be called Disney's Halloween House. And was gonna be a lot darker for people to complain about the scary bits in this. This apparently, just like the Black Cauldron, it was gonna be a lot darker and a lot scarier. And of course it evolved, but in this case, unlike Black Cauldron, it actually evolved into a decent movie.
there was no cutting involved.
Right, yeah. And I want to say Carol Channing was the first choice for Winifred.
Or was it Rosie O'Donnell?
No, Rosie had been approached, I think, for the role of Mary.
Okay.
This says...
And she didn't want to do it. She didn't want to do anything. She thought that being a witch would not, I guess, behoove her career or whatever. And actually, Kathy Najimy was a little hesitant because she was afraid of offending actual witches.
This says, TV Trope says Cloris Leachman was
Cloris
the first
Leachman.
Choice.
There we go.
Ooh,
I know of somebody like that. You know, another big like theater star. You know, like a Bette Midler, was one of their first choices for the role of Winifred. So And then, of course, yeah, once they hired Bette Midler, she actually had a lot of say in Winifred's look. She's somewhat based on the Queen of Hearts from Alice in Wonderland.
I can see it.
Yeah. But then like the teeth and stuff, you know, Bette was all like, I imagine her that, you know, she probably eats, you know, raw things. She's a meat eater, and therefore she has these big teeth in the front and everything. And they played with all sorts of different makeup and stuff before they finally landed on the look that we have in the movie and everything. So, yeah. So, but yeah, what those three together, that's just one of those like lightning in a bottle type team ups where it's like, yep, please. Unlike some of the other roles, especially the kids, the role of Max was offered to Leonardo DiCaprio. He turned it down so that he could do What's Eating Gilbert Grape, which I guess that worked out in his favor. And then the kid that actually ended up playing Max, Omri, when he first auditioned, they turned him down. Apparently at the time he had a cold. So he thinks that maybe have affected his initial audition. But they were getting down to the wire and they still had not found their Max. And they're like, well, that kid was kind of good. Why did we turn him away? So they asked him to come back and audition again. And then that's when he got the part. And then Vanessa Shaw plays Allison. She got hired at like the 11th hour as well. Thora Birch wasn't quite a last minute audition, but she was one of many actresses of her age that they went through before they finally landed on her. So I kind of find that kind of interesting that it's like, you know, like the three witches, boom, there you go. But the kids, they kind of struggled to get. But I think they got the right ones there. Mm-hmm. And then Sean Murray, who plays human Thackeray, as we see at the beginning and then at the end, but he's not the voice of Thackeray. The voice of Thackeray, both as a human and as the cat, is Jason Marsden, who we talked about in the Goofy movie, who's funnily enough played Max, a person named Max. So, but they just like Jason Marsden's voice better than Sean Murray's, even in Thackeray's human form. So they just had him dub all of the lines. So, which is kind of obvious at the beginning with the bit that takes place in 1693. It's like there's a couple of times where the lips and the mouth don't quite match.
Yeah. Well, and it's funny because like I recognize the voice. And I'm like, that's not his. Is that what he looks like? Is that his face? I don't know. It doesn't make sense. And then, you know, you see the credits roll. I'm like, that's not who that is. So, yeah, it confused me when I was a kid. So, like, I don't think that this is right. And then, you know, eventually I figured it out. Oh, right. They just dubbed him over. But it all worked out.
Yep. And the whole thing with the cat, what's interesting is the cat, they used like 6 or 8 actual cats that all did different things. Cats are hard to train, harder to train than a dog. They can be trained, but it's a lot harder, and you usually can't train them nearly to the extent of a dog. Where like a dog, you could train to do all sorts of things. The cat, you could usually train it to do like 1 or 2 things. So they would have a cat that did really well with like jumping up on one of the kids' shoulders. And then maybe another cat that did really well with like batting their hand. Or, you know, something like that. Or another one that's just really good at walking a along with the rest of the cast. So yeah, they used a number of black cats for different parts. And then there was an animatronic black cat that they used as well that actually ended up getting reused on Sabrina the Teenage Witch for Salem. So there's that. And then there was the CGI that they did where they took the actual cats and then replaced the faces with a digital face so that they could do the talking. And actually they made the company that did the CGI worked really, really hard in trying to make the CGI face look as realistic as possible. And the Disney executives thought that it was too scary looking because of like his teeth and things. So they actually had to dial it back. So if there are like Chrissy, you mentioned, it's like there are a few times where Binx's CGI face doesn't quite hold up, and that may be because they dialed back the realism so that it would be less scary.
Yeah, that is possible. Although I'm trying to think, like, okay, I've seen cats, you know, black cats, all kinds of cats in my life, and I'm like, have I ever noticed their teeth? And I'm like, well, sometimes they'll poke out, but I'm like, maybe something about it on screen or you know, if it's talking, would be a little too uncanny valley.
But maybe. Like, I mean, there's a few times where he hisses.
Yeah, that could be it.
Yeah, where you can see the teeth, and I could kind of see that. Like, oh yeah, he does kind of have pointy teeth. So, you know, maybe that's it. I don't know.
But I have no idea.
Yep.
I think the major ones that I like, oh yeah, that CGI is definitely when he's talking, especially that first scene where you know, Max, you know, he's lit the candle and he's you know, lights the sprinklers, or you know, turns the sprinklers on and the flaming rain of death or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And then Binx, you know, he gets knocked over and Binx is like, nice going. I'm like, oh yeah, that's definitely CGI.
Yeah.
But the other parts, I'm like, that it doesn't really bug me. So maybe it's just because it's a close up.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, when it's close up, it's a little more easier to tell, I guess.
But it's so quick, and it's just, and it's there, and it's gone, and it's like, okay, well, it's fine.
Yeah. Yeah, this is again kind of like the Black Cauldron. This is one that took a while to get even done. Disney actually bought the script for it in 84 and then sat on it. and then the original title was Disney's Halloween House, and then it turned into the movie that we have now, and was filmed actually in Salem, Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. And the town of Salem has taken that to heart, that, you know, that it's because this movie has developed such a cult following. Of course, Salem, it being Salem, Massachusetts, and the Salem witch trials and all that. Of course, at Halloween, they play up Halloween pretty high anyway. But the year of the movie's 25th anniversary, in their parade that they have every year, they had a float based on Thackeray Banks. And then they made a doll of Winifred dressed in one of the National Parks Service's uniforms. So you can go to Salem, Massachusetts and actually visit some of the filming locations, kind of like I did in Cleveland.
I've been to Salem, but not during Halloween. It's been
busy.
Awesome. Yeah.
I imagine it's quite busy.
Yeah. That's been on my list to do on Halloween. Like that,
I bet that'd be a lot of
Sleepy Hollow. Yeah, yeah. Like those two things. Like, I want to do that. making like a nice little road trip in October, but I never could.
Yeah. Yeah, New England in the fall.
Yes.
That's just
you have to.
Yeah, you have to. You just gotta be prepared for it to be busy because that's what everybody does. The leaf peepers.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's like
luckily I have connections, so I know like less
busy crazy places.
Yeah.
That's good. Well, you can tell us off the air.
Yes. Tell us off mic.
Yep.
Don't give away the secrets.
Well, and there's like there's that scene where Allison is saying, you know, because they go over to her house and trick or treating, and she's like, you know, my mom used to be in charge of the museum. We could go over there. So they go over to the Sanderson house, and it's, you know, it's been a museum, which I think it's hilarious that they have all the display cases and all the museum, like the gift shop stuff and the ropes and stuff. And then it's covered in cobwebs. Like it hasn't been, it's like, wait, so they left all the museum pieces and the museum supplies.
It happens if stuff gets shut down, especially, you know, cause Allison said, you know, they closed it because weird things were happening there, and they may have thought maybe they reopened it at some point.
Mm-hmm. No, that is true. It was just, always funny to me, but what I was getting at is like later the fire department shows up and they're like, it's Halloween, kids are pulling pranks, and so they're like, I hate this holiday. So I wonder if in Salem, like the actual Salem, if people like get up to mischief and they're like, ooh, we're gonna go find some witches or whatever, something, you know, do some
I wouldn't be surprised
Halloween scary things. Mm-hmm. And I'm like I'm sure that's something that's true to life.
There's I don't know how big it is around the states, but like around my area we have Mischief Night, which is the night before Halloween, and like everyone like does pranks, like, you know, the traditional like TPing a house, that kind of stuff. So that's around here, that's like the night before Halloween. I don't know if that's like big anywhere else. It's like I hear it, but I don't hear it too often.
There's definitely a lot of mischief going on in this movie. Mm-hmm. How much toilet paper they went through for those poor trees.
I know, those two guys are just like, it's like they don't want to leave, but they're like, okay, well, I guess we've done everything we can. We can't steal candy anymore because the kids have all gone home, and we can't look in it. Girls undressing because they're all in bed. We've mm-hmm. eaten all the candy, and then they get caught in the they get caught by the witches.
Some of those treats were real. They actually took East Coast trees and brought them to the studio for the stuff filmed on the studio lot. That's Disney for you.
Uh-huh. They find a way.
I like the story of like how like the story came to be. Was the what's his name?
It was
a story he told to his kids.
Yeah,
the scriptwriter. It was a story he told his kids because of a black cat that they saw, and he was saying, "Oh, that was actually a boy who was turned into a cat by a witch."
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, "Oh, that's cute. I like stories like that."
So, there is a sequel. It is not a movie sequel.
It is a comic.
A book. It was released as a novelization of the movie, plus a sequel, which is about Allison and Max's daughter.
Mm-hmm.
It's in my to be read pile.
Yes.
Still. I need to fix that.
Yes. And so while I'm like, I mean, there's been talk of doing an on-screen sequel, which I'm like, do we? Not, let's not. Let's just leave it and just enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I'm like, okay, book sequel. That one's fine. So yeah, that one's like, okay, maybe I should read this and see what it's like and what they do with it. Yeah. So if you're wanting a sequel, and I'm not going to say anything about that, but if you do want a sequel, there's a book one, so you can pick that up and see how it stands up.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's basically the sequel is basically about their daughter who's like, oh, she doesn't believe what her parents went through.
Yeah.
And you know how all that ends, I'm sure.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is like the end of the movie, they did kind of leave it kind of open. Or
yeah.
Are they really gone? or does the book get its power from somewhere else?
True. Yeah. And it's like maybe it's about the book more than it's about them because they did say that the book, you know, was given to Winifred by the devil himself. So, you know, maybe it's more about the devil or something. But I don't know. I like the movie is, you know, it's these silly witches doing silly witch things, even though it's very dangerous and scary. But it's Halloween, so it works.
Mm-hmm. That being said, there's going to be a unofficial, I don't know, sequel, prequel? I don't know, but they have been very tight-lipped on it. There's going to be something. If you follow Bette Midler on Instagram, you will see that she recently posted a picture of herself, Sarah Jessica, and Kathy, dressed as the Sanderson sisters. In full garb, hair, makeup, all of it, because the New York Restoration Project, which is a charity that helps create like green spaces in New York, like communal gardens and things like that, which actually Bette Midler helped found. They are doing a fundraiser on the day before Halloween on the 30th, and you can buy virtual event tickets to watch it, but there is going to be a what they're calling In Search of the Sanderson Sisters, a Hocus Pocus Halloween takeover. Ooh. And it is going to have the OG Sanderson sisters, along with other well-known actors, including some of the other casts like Doug Jones, Thora Birch, and Omri Katz, along with other actors like Glenn Close and John Stamos and Meryl Streep and Billy Crystal, who are also going to be part of this whole shindig. I will put a link to the New York Restoration Project's Instagram, and you can find the link there for information. But Bette Midler posted that on her Instagram actually yesterday, of them in front of a blue screen filming something, and it's like, something's happening, and it's like, how appropriate.
I love the poster, like the promotional poster.
So it should be interesting to see what exactly is going to happen.
Yes. So watch, well, that space anyway.
Yep.
And see what happened, probably in time for Halloween. Who knows?
Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, there's been rumors of a sequel have been flying around for a long, long time.
Anything that isn't nailed down from 30, 40 years ago that they can remake and rehash, they say they want to try. So
yeah, well, and Bette has gone back and forth on whether she would be willing to do a sequel. I guess the most recent time she was asked about it, that she actually would be amenable to it. And I know, I think both Kathy and Sarah Jessica have said they would be as well. So we'll see. It may happen eventually. Yeah.
In the meantime, you have the original to enjoy. And
yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And it's just such a good movie to watch this time of year. It's just so much fun. And the fact that, you know, because it has developed this cult following, that it's really starting to be embraced by not only the fans but Disney as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because for at least for the longest time when I was visiting the parks, if you went to the Mickey's Not So Scary Halloween Party, which is their Halloween party they do at the Magic Kingdom in Florida, the times that I've been to it, it's you've got trick-or-treating in the parks, which is awesome. Oh my god, you can leave with so much candy. There's a special parade and fireworks that are exclusive to the party. You cannot see them any other time. You have to go to this separate ticketed party. They have characters in like their Halloween outfits out for meet and greets. They have some rare characters that come out at that point. They usually have a stage show on the big stages in front of the castle. And the years that I was going, it was all about the villains. It was like, I can't remember the name of the actual show. But it was just this whole, the night for the villains to come out and do, you know, be themselves and do what they do best, because it's Halloween and all that. But since 2015, it is now the Hocus Pocus Villain Spelltacular, where it is the Sanderson sisters are back for one night for Halloween, even though the party takes place on multiple nights from like September to like actually like November 1st. Halloween season lasts quite a while at Disney. But as far as this in-universe story, it's like the Sanderson sisters are back for one night and Winifred is going to put together a special party potion for them to celebrate. But some of the ingredients that they require, they acquire from other Disney villains. So they're singing and dancing, and it's costumes and fabulous villains and all that, and you can find videos of it. I'll put a link up to one from last year. Unfortunately, because of the pandemic, Mickey's Not So Scary for this year has been canceled, so they're not doing the Halloween parties this year, so no Sanderson sister stage show this year. But I've got a one I watched from last year, one of the parties last year, that's a good recording of it, that you can watch it. And of course, it being the Sanderson sisters, the show ends with them performance of I Put a Spell on You.
Because of course it's
Disney.
Mm-hmm.
Which that song's been stuck in my head all day.
Yep.
Not that I'm complaining. So.
It gets stuck in my head often.
Yeah. Yeah. And like Bette Midler did I Put a Spell on You when she was on tour in 2015. She put on a version of Winifred's outfit. There's been Hocus Pocus related Funko Pops released. Mm-hmm. It gets put on like repeat essentially on Freeform. What's now Freeform used to be ABC mm-hmm. Family, along with all the Harry Potter movies, which I never understood why ABC, a Disney company, played all the Harry Potter movies every year at Halloween. But I'm not going to complain. But it's
I think it's just because it's magical and wizardy that and people. Yeah.
yeah,
associate that with Halloween.
Yeah, there's some odd choices there, but that's another topic for another day.
I
mean, I've seen like merchandise, like I have a coworker who has a lanyard that says I'm the fourth Sanderson sister, and she's been wearing it all October to work, and I'm like, that's cool. So Disney is definitely embraced this movie, and even though it was just, you know, it was just sort of a thing that they did back in the day, and they didn't think much of it, and now, as with so many things, it's just become its own cult classic, and it's got a following, and so they're like, hey, there is money to be made.
Mm-hmm.
But that's all right, because we'll pay it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Hocus Pocus Assist. For me personally, it's like, it's a tradition. Like, every year, my sister and I, after we're done trick-or-treating, we would watch Hocus Pocus. And even now, like, we don't actually go trick-or-treating, but we hand that candy. Even after that, we still watch Hocus Pocus.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I couldn't have watched it. Like, I've already watched it twice this month. I'm only planning at least one more time on Halloween.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, yep.
Let's finish off with a few bits of trivia.
Yay.
So, story wise, some things that you may not have picked up on when we first are introduced to Max, and he's gone to school. You know, he's at school and he's wearing a tie-dye shirt. The colors in his shirt match each of the colors of the Sanderson sisters, the green, purple, and red.
Cool.
At the end, when Binks the cat dies, now that the curse is broken, the grave that he is right next to when he dies is his sister's.
Mm-hmm.
So some behind the scenes trivia: the statue of Winifred, when she turns into stone because she's standing on hollow ground when the sun rises, they made 7 of those.
Wow.
And I don't know if this is still the case, but supposedly at the Planet Hollywood restaurant in Orlando, one of them is there along with the spell book.
Ooh.
So I guess anybody's listening, next time if you go to the Planet Hollywood, let us know if Statue of Winifred is still there along with the book.
mm-hmm.
If you wondered if this was a plot hole, because it's not specified, the reason that Binks doesn't speak to anyone except for the three that were there when the black flame candle was lit is because he can only speak to those involved in the lighting of the candle. So that's why he was never able to talk to his father back in the 1600s at the hanging, when his dad was like, get away from me, you crazy cat.
Away, beast.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And he's not able to like speak to anybody else, because then, you know, if there's a talking cat, then people might be more likely to believe the story that it was real.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why I always assume like why can't, like, why wouldn't you tell? Oh, it makes sense, like, because like the spell, like, it's dormant at mm-hmm. the time.
Yep. The scene with Gary and Penny Marshall when Penny Marshall sicks the dog on the Sanderson sisters to get them to leave. The dog is Kathy's.
Aww.
Yeah.
Go after mama.
Yeah. Okay. If if bugs and stuff creep you out, you may skip ahead the next few minutes. But at the 25th anniversary Halloween bash, Sarah Jessica Parker revealed that she did actually eat that spider.
Ooh.
And I thought she was just kind of, you know, miming it, like, ooh, a spider, hump, like, you know, not really, because a spider, it's so small, like, you could sort of just pretend that it's there, but yeah, ugh, okay. Yep,
she actually ate it. Okay. And then the moths that come out of Billy's mouth when he cuts his mouth open, those were real. Along with the dirt and dust that flies out of his mouth too. Oh. They put it, they were in Doug Jones's mouth, but like they put like
a protective, like a barrier or something.
Yeah, like a compartment, kind of like the thing you use to do impressions at the dentist.
Oh,
so they would put like that in his mouth, and then the moths would go in it. And then when he opened his mouth, it would fly out along with the dust. So, yeah. So sorry if I just ruined anybody's appetite.
Hopefully you guys weren't eating lunch while you were
listening.
Yeah. after the Sanderson sisters are torched in the kiln at the school, and Danny and Allison are out on the lawn doing like cartwheels and, you know, celebrating and all that. You see off in the distance a fountain. That is the same fountain from the opening credit sequence from the TV show Friends.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. There's that. And then a last little bit of trivia is in an interesting bit of serendipity, Sarah Jessica Parker, who plays, you know, one of the Sanderson sisters and gets executed during the Salem witch trials. If you know the TV show Who Do You Think You Are, which was a series that took celebrities and did like their genealogy for them. During Sarah Jessica Parker's episode, she discovered that her 10th great grandmother, a woman named Esther Elwell, was arrested in Salem in the late 1600s for committing sundry acts of witchcraft and choking a neighbor to death. She never went to court, so she was never executed, but kind of a cool bit of serendipity that she had an ancestor that was arrested for being a witch, and then she goes on to play a witch, an actual witch in Salem.
Yes. So what do you know?
Which I think is much nicer trivia than eating
spiders.
I know that eating insects are a delicacy in some places, but
it's not for me. Yeah, not my. Yeah.
It's got its place, just not here.
Yeah. Anyway, well. Is there anything else we want to talk about with Hocus Pocus? Or no?
Okay. I think we're good.
All right. Well, if any of our listeners want to chime in about their thoughts on this movie, or just tell us what your favorite Halloween movie is and what you enjoy watching at this spooky time of year. So if you want to tell us, send us some feedback. Send it to fiveishfangirls@gmail.com. You can also go to our website, which is thefiveishfangirls.com. Find links to all of our social media at that website. We're on Facebook and Instagram and YouTube. If you leave comments at any of those places, we'll count that as feedback as well. And, you know, interact with us. We share stuff on our Facebook and Instagram pages all the time. So check that out. And you can also download our podcast wherever you find podcasts. We're there pretty much. And if you would like to help support the podcast, we have a Patreon, we have Ko-fi, we have a merchandise shop on Redbubble, we have our Amazon affiliate link. So if you're doing any Amazon shopping, click on us first and then go to Amazon. with that link. And then also our Audible subscription link is good for a free audiobook from Audible, and that helps support the podcast as well. And as always, we thank you for your support, whether you're supporting us financially or just leaving us comments or sending us feedback or just listening to the podcast. We're glad to know that you're out there, and hope everyone is doing well and staying sane and through all of craziness of 2020. So
yeah,
go enjoy some Halloween.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
wherever you are.
Yeah,
indeed.
And just beware of black candles.
Yeah.
Yes. Don't light the black flame candle.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And don't need any chocolate covered fingers of men named Clark.
Yes. I forgot about that line. That had to be chuckling.
I didn't have a Clark bar. I had a Clark cup over the weekend. It's made by the same company, but instead of a bar, it's like a Reese cup. But the filling is the same filling you'd find in a Clark bar. So if you don't want a Clark bar, you can have a Clark cup instead. And no fingers are involved, I believe. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was a little crunchy, but I'm pretty sure that was crispy rice stuff and not the finger.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, on that note, talking about eating disgusting things, we shall sign off for this week.
This is Brittany and Bethem saying goodnight.
This is Chrissy saying goodnight from Salt Lake City.
This is Holly from Wisconsin saying good evening.
And this is Rachel in Indianapolis, Indiana. Hello, I want my book. Bonjour, je veux mon livre.
Because you're mine. Stop the things you do. What's up? I like.
You have been listening to the Five-ish Fangirls podcast. You can find more episodes and information at thefiveishfangirls.com. Any and all books, movies, games, and any other forms of media mentioned are owned and operated by the respective copyright holders. No copyright infringement is intended or implied. If you wish to support the show, the easiest way is to leave us a rating and review. More ratings and reviews will make it easier for others to find the show. If you wish to support us monetarily, you can do so at patreon.com/fiveishfangirlspodcast. All money goes towards fees and equipment to keep the show going. For official Five-ish Fangirls merchandise, visit redbubble.com/people/fiveishfangirls. We love hearing from our listeners and encourage feedback. You can email us at fiveishfangirls@gmail.com. You can also like and follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/fiveishfangirls. Thank you so much for listening, and may the squee be with you.
On you because you're mad. Ah! Ah! Ooh! Ah! Ooh! Ah! Ooh! Ah! Ooh!